Good morning, I'm gonna go ahead and call the meeting to order. I guess there were some complaints last time that nobody could hear me, so they gave me a microphone. Good morning, happy to see you all. Call the meeting to order at 9:35. We'll go ahead and take the roll call.
Commissioner Melissa McKinley.
Here.
Thomas Boyton. Deidre Gibson. Nancy Wiseman.
Here.
Myron Nigelberg. Sharon Green.
Here.
David Rafaidos.
Present.
Shane Searchwell. Bobby Valentine.
Here.
David Evans. Betty Jones. Dina Hill. David Evans.
Here.
We have a call.
Great, thank you. I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt the agenda for September 9th, 2015, with one change. Staff has recommended that we move information item number 3A to an action item since it does require a signature by the chair.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
As amended.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, motion carries.
Could I ask you to speak up a little?
Sure, sorry about that. Motion to approve, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes for the June 10th, 2015 meeting.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. For the sake of time, I will leave my comments for each item. I don't have any at this time, but thank you staff for organizing the good meeting and getting us all here this morning. Let's see. We do have two general public comments. Do I have any more speakers that wish to speak? No? Okay, so with that, Stanley Boyce.
She was asking if there are any additional speakers.
General public comments.
Stanley Boyce, you have a public comment card in? Would you like to speak?
Yes. Can I use the mic?
I need it.
I just want to welcome everybody here, Commissioner, all the staff, and just for my own edification, would members of the public raise their hand to hear? Okay, one, two people. I mean, that's very disappointing for a transportation disadvantaged meeting just to have a handful of people. Of course, one of the reasons is that this meeting was only advertised, very small ad, in the Palm Beach Post and in the Spanish newspaper, where it should have been widely distributed so that the riding public and those who were might be interested in transportation services would see it. So we'll have to go from there. And the purpose of the meeting is to give the public the opportunity to comment on transportation disadvantaged services. And as some of you may know, I get information from Palm Tree Connection, the MPO, and other government entities. I don't use any of my own statistics. And the name of the game is that both PalmTrans service and Connection service still has a lot to be desired based on their costs, based on complaints, based on their lack of increasing service and many other aspects that I can't go into in my 3 minutes here. But I would like members of the board who may not be too acquainted with transportation services that it is really not too good, especially based on increasing costs in the millions for both services all the time. So based on the few members of the public who are here who might speak and other aspects, I'll just leave it at that for now and comment on any pertinent agenda items. Thank you.
Ms. Valentine?
No disrespect from the previous speaker, but since he doesn't use the system and is not a rider, he really doesn't have the right to say that this is not doing well. I ride all the time, and I have just told Rick and Ron and Jeannie that their drivers are doing an excellent job for the short time that they have been here. I've only had one who got lost because he doesn't know the area, and I called Lou and I told him so that he could get a message to Charlie to see that they do get to a map so they know the area. But that's the only thing. I have been on time. I have been courteously. I have been assisted when I've had problems with the seatbelt. They've introduced themselves. They haven't harassed, as far as I know, anybody. I've watched. I've ridden with a lot of people. I've watched. And they've had to put up with some things, too. You get very cranky sometimes when you have to sit in a wheelchair. And these drivers have a lot to do, and they did. And I think that Ron and his staff are doing an excellent job. And Lou, as operations, his ladies and gentlemen, know what the right questions to ask. They're not nasty. They're nothing. They're very good. Thanks to the staff, we, those of us who are disabled and use the system, are very pleased. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And I'd also like to ask staff on the advertising to make sure that we're including it on the meeting notices on Channel 20, as well as any social media opportunities through the county's social media pages and on the website. That would be some expanded advertising opportunities that won't cost money. Next, I have Kathy
Bainman.
Thank you.
And I just want to say one thing. To belie what she just said, if you look at the complaints, it tells a different story with Palmtran Connection. And I'm here today, and I'm noticing the same thing. There's nobody here from the public. And that means that there's no public input, and all decisions basically are top-down. And what does that mean? The perception is out there that this is an ivory tower, okay? And there are countless people out there, incidentally, who don't even know these services exist. And I know one in particular. She's an amputee, recent amputee. Went through struggle, went through hell. And she got a van, adapted the van. The van broke down. She has some terrible calamities in her life. She didn't even know. I told her, I said, do you realize you can go on Palmtran Connection? You have a job. You need to be there. Now you think you're stuck with no way to get to the job. You have Palmtran Connection. She knew nothing about it. Okay? And incidentally, I've been in the medical field for 20 years. Okay? And I work with mentally challenged adults in many cases. And many of them, as you all know, either get a government stipend to work somewhere at Bell's, Target, or whomever, or else they basically work at Goodwill, okay? And I could be there with them when they're waiting for Palmtran Connection, and after multiple calls, where are you? The Palmtran Connection would finally show up. And if you ask them, what happened? They beat you to get mad, okay? Now, and so that's a problem, and it's a problem because a lot of, I noticed with the mentally challenged adults, that would throw their whole day off. It really would. And I mean, you can imagine it for yourself. If you're late from work through no fault of your own, your boss is not going to sit there, oh, I understand. He's not going to be happy. Let's be frank about it. And it affects employers, too. Employers are impacted, too, because their workload for the day is now altered because the people they thought were going to be there at a particular time were not there. Okay? So this is an economic issue. And it's affecting the most vulnerable members of our society, all right? And that's contemptible in a county as wealthy as Palm Beach County is, okay? Where we pride ourselves on our entertainment venues, our Clematis Street, our waterfront venues, and then we treat our public transportation. We have one of the worst public transportations in the country. And it's 40 years behind the times, especially Palmtran, okay? So there needs to be changes. And the last thing I want to say, and I'll be done with it, last thing I want to say, 2 days ago was Labor Day. And again, another holiday that nobody who has to rely on public transportation can take advantage. That's all of the holidays of the year. Do you know that is archaic? This is the only county that I can imagine. I talked to other, I literally did some research. I'm a journalist, and I plan to write about this. And I'm doing research right now, and I've talked to different transportation companies. And they can't conceive, what, you have no transportation on any holidays? That's 40 years behind the time. You know, so there's a whole lot of work that needs to be done, and you need to take it seriously and look for the people that also are taxpayers instead of the wealth, you know, whatever you're dealing with. Thank you.
Kathy, just so you know, at least on the Palm Tree, not the Palm Tree and Connect side of the house, I did ask Shannon LaRocque to look into what it would cost to provide services on holidays, and it was a pretty exponential number and very, very low ridership. But
How would you know if it's low ridership if you have no ridership on holidays? Excuse me, she's talking. Okay.
That's okay, Bonnie. I got it. We will address, we can bring a report back to you at the next quarterly meeting on this issue. In addition, as is any other meeting that we have in the county, we take general comment at the beginning of these meetings, but not after each item. However, Mr. Boyce, I will give you the liberty at the end of the meeting, if you would like to add to your comments, I'll be more than happy to give you an additional 3 minutes, but we are not going to interrupt each action item for comments from the public. With that, I'd also like to, when we do the monthly operating report, if we can make sure that we address any issues of complaints that have been received and how we've handled those, that would be helpful. Next up, we have a special presentation from the NPO staff. You're sitting right next to me.
Thank you so much. So I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Annielle Delgado, and I'm a planner at the NPO. So what I'd like to do is first welcome you again to the first meeting of the fiscal year 2016. So I'd just like to cover, you know, why we're really here and kind of give a little refresher for those of you who may be a little new. I'll just talk about it. And just give a brief overview of what the LCD is and why we're here. So we'll cover who's involved in the process. The operating guidelines for the LCB and the DOPA, which is the Designated Official Planning Agency, which is the Palm Beach MPO. Membership, Robert's Rules of Order, attendance, our bylaws, our duties as an LCB. What we do, is one of the things we do is evaluate the CTC, our grievance guidelines, and we'll go over a timeline for the fiscal year. So I'd like to briefly cover who's involved in the process. So we have the Commission for the Transportation Disadvantaged, the CTD, and they work out of Tallahassee. It's a Florida state entity. So they designated us, the NPO, as the DOPA, Designated Official Planning Agency. So what we do is we recommend to the CTD any recommendations or findings we have. The DOPA has appointed the LCB, which is all of you here in this room, to kind of offer the service needs, identify them, and help really provide these. And oversee the transportation coordinator, which is PalmTran. So PalmTran has contracts with the operators, which we have three of them, and some of the members are here today representing. And all in all, what we do is we provide services to transportation disadvantaged persons. So we're all here for one collective good, and that's to provide TD services. So our guidelines. Like I said, we're advisory body to the CTC, and we really provide information, advice, and some direction. And again, we are the DOPA, the MPO is the DOPA, working with the LCB. So membership is appointed by the planning agency. So we have Commissioner McKinley here as our chair. The vice chair is elected by the LCB members. Alternate members are great. So if you don't have one now, it'd be nice to appoint one. They just need to represent the same interests that you represent. And of course, they can vote in absence of you. So LCB membership currently, we have 5 vacancies. So we have 5 vacancies, like I said. Persons with Disabilities, Representative for the Disabled, the Department of Children and Families, Department of Healthcare Administration, and Vocational Rehabilitation. So if anyone has any recommendations on who can fill those seats, we would love to hear from you. Please get with me after the meeting and we can find some people to fill those spots. So our bylaws, we develop and review them annually, which we'll be doing at today's meeting. They're approved and submitted to the commission, and of course they involve Robert's Rules of Order, so I'll cover those really briefly. So like everyone knows, Robert's Rules of Order, what we do to kind of facilitate the meeting. What I want everyone to keep in mind is everyone has the right to participate before anyone speaks a second time. So everyone also has the right to know what's going on. Only urgent matters can interrupt the speaker, and of course, only one motion is discussed at a time. So it's really about respecting who's speaking and going forward one motion at a time. And of course, the chair and vice chair will definitely facilitate, and you can take their lead on what to do. I'll see the attendance. So one thing that we do want to cover is the fact that if you miss three consecutive meetings, and it's unexcused. So to excuse your absence, you just need to let the DOPA, the MPO, know within one business day prior of your absence, and it won't be unexcused. But if you miss three in a row, you're automatically rescinded of your membership. So again, please notify us if you're going to be absent. So some duties of the LCB. Of course, there's the annual evaluation of PalmTran, the CTC. So what we do is we review and provide recommendations for all transportation funding as well. We establish some guidelines and trip priorities. This is great. We seek innovative ways to improve cost effectiveness, efficiency, safety, work hours, etc. We appoint a grievance committee, and we annually review these grievance procedures. And finally, we review the coordination contracts for the fiscal year. We also need to hold at least one public hearing, and this fiscal year will be on December 9th, just prior to this LCB meeting. We need to comply with the Florida statutes regarding conflicts of interest. So I'll break it down for you really simply. It's conflicts of interest. So you shouldn't take any benefits or offer anyone else any benefits in favor of voting one way or another, you know, proving or opposing something. We work with regional workforce boards, and we evaluate multi-county or regional transportation opportunities as they come up. So like I said, there's the TDSP as well, another thing that we develop. So this process will begin early in December, and it goes until March. So we really need your help and your feedback regarding the TDSP. So it's really a culmination of all the things transportation disadvantage. We work with PalmTran as well to make a pretty great document. So please, we're going to need your help with that. There's also, like I said, the CTC evaluation. So this is really seeing how CTC, PalmTran, is operating and where we can help them improve if needed. And then we do submit this to the CTD for their approval as well. And so they're evaluated on a workbook that's provided by the Florida CTD. We can do a review. PalmTran has a section as well to complete, and then there's a status report at the end. So let me talk about the grievance process quickly. There's a difference between a service complaint and an actual formal grievance. So a complaint is something like a late trip, a discourteous driver, unclean vehicles, really CTC-based. A grievance, though, if it's chronic, we haven't been able to resolve it, the person is still unhappy, that's more of a formal grievance. And the LCB can actually hear and advise those grievances. So you have a formal hearing to address those issues if need be. But we can't determine. We can hear or advise, but cannot determine the grievance. So again, just in case this happens, we render a response in writing, giving any recommendations we might have for the grievance. We'll make some copies available to anyone if they please, and they must be in accessible format, of course. And then we will, you know, specify that we can't take longer than 60 days to do this. So really quickly, the timeline for this fiscal year is up here for you, and it's also available online if you'd like. So today we're approving the grievance procedures and the bylaws. We are going to be at the CTD workshop, myself and another MPO staff member, in October, late October. So we'll of course come back and give you any findings that we have from the conference. Like I said, the TDSP process will start in December. We'll also have our public meeting, our public hearing. Transit Day, a couple of people may be there. It's in Tallahassee each year in January of next year. There's also TV Day that's happening in Tallahassee as well the day before. In March, we'll begin our CTC evaluation process and have our third quarter meeting. And finally, the fourth quarter, the CTC will be due. We'll approve our TDSP, and we'll have our last meeting. So with that, does anyone have any questions for me?
Hi, David Orfeitas. On the LCB membership list, could you put that one back up there? Because I didn't see all the ones that were highlighted in red that you're seeking members, ABC, for and what's the difference between representative for the disabled versus agency? One's an agency rep versus an individual who's disabled?
Exactly. So one might be a rider who's disabled, and the other is an actual agency representing
so
disabled persons.
For a Department of Children rep, we're talking like Clay Walker type of? Okay.
He's a great person, exactly.
Yeah. And in health care, okay. So I think I can give you a couple names for that. Wait,
and you have one more time.
Health care administration.
Vocational rehabilitation is the last one.
Okay. Okay. I've got those.
Thank you. I'd love to speak with you after. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes.
Question?
Yes. Concerning absences.
Yes.
If you're in the hospital, it's not planned or anything, you just go in. I've been in the hospital and I've called to say I couldn't make a meeting, and then it has me listed as absent. I don't want to get kicked off the board again, and I want to make sure that if I call and I'm in the hospital, that is considered an excused absence?
Yes, certainly. If it's something out of your control, for example, illness or emergency, of course we'll work with you to make sure that's
okay.
Excused.
And what were the other three, four? There's two, division and families, children and families, transportation.
I'll read them off again. So agency for persons with disabilities, representative for the disabled, Department of Children and Families, Department of Healthcare Administration,
Mm-hmm.
And vocational rehabilitation.
I don't see health care on the list.
It's ACA.
It's
vocational
rehabilitation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else?
And then I have one other thing.
Yes.
You just passed it. I marked it. It says you have an annual training workshop. Is the public invited? In other words, can I attend? It's on 10/25.
Right, so that's actually in Daytona Beach. So, right.
No, I can't go there.
Myself and one other MDO staff member will be in attendance, and we plan on bringing back all the information for you all to hear at the meeting following that.
But if it's held here, is the public invited? I'm sure it rotates around the state, and it'll eventually come here or Fort Lauderdale or Miami, and we could get that I could get to. So I was wondering if the public is invited to those workshops.
It's generally in Daytona or Orlando. Mm-hmm. Has that ever rotated to Tampa? So I think it's really been in those two, and it's because, I mean, this year they're tying it with the FPTA conference. But I will look into that for you, Bobby.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else have a question?
Motion to approve.
It was just an information item. Thank you.
Now the next one's going to require a motion to approve. Our next item, we're on to action items now. It's the FY 2016 local coordinating bylaws. As Annie just mentioned, we have to approve those at the first meeting of each fiscal year. A copy of them has been provided in your agenda packet. So unless there's any discussion, I would entertain a motion to adopt the FY 2016 Local Coordinating Board bylaws.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Is there any further discussion on this item? Any comments from staff?
I just wanted to mention briefly that the changes we made were what I discussed regarding attendance. So again, if you miss three meetings that are unexcused and we don't know about it, then you're automatically rescinded of your membership. So that's really the big change that was made with the bylaws, and really the only change, actually.
The only thing I would request is on your absentee tally sheet. You have me listed as present and absent before I was even a member of this board, so if you can fix that, that would be good. Hard to be present when you weren't appointed to it yet.
Okay. I think there should be an asterisk where you started out.
Yeah.
So we have to maintain the full year.
Okay.
So where you start, the date that you started out, there would have been an asterisk right there beside
yes,
the
yes. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. The next item, we have the FY 2016 Local Coordinating Board Grievance Procedures. Again, a copy of that has been included in your agenda packet. Do we have any comments from staff before I accept the motion? No comments from staff. May I have a motion to approve?
Okay.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. The next item is the election of the vice chair. Do we have nominations for the vice chair position?
Since he's not here, I vote for Thomas Boynton.
Are there any further nominations? I'll go ahead and close the floor for nominations. Is there a second for Thomas's nomination?
I'll second it.
Any discussion? Just like to add that as a volunteer for 23 years in the community, I always know that you get the most jobs when you don't show up. And Thomas has been a wonderful vice chair and happy to have him by my side. So with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, and we'll send a congratulations letter to Mr. Boynton. We did move one item from information up to action, and that was the annual operating report. Do we have comments from staff on the annual operating report? In your agenda packet, that is item 3A.
So I would like to.
Yeah, actually, I'll take that. When I looked, everyone had an opportunity to look at this report. It may look a little busy. As I was gathering the information to produce the report, I came to one conclusion. This is a transition period for us. For those who don't know, we transitioned between Metro and into the new providers. So that's why if you're looking at the numbers, you're going to find something that just doesn't seem right. And actually, it is right because, again, it was 7 months of Metro and 5 months of the new providers. So please keep that in mind as we go through the report. The report reflects mileage, trips, expenses for that time period, or revenue for the time period. So I don't know if anybody had an opportunity to go to it. If you want to go to it line by line, we can do that. If anybody just wants to speak to it, we can do that as well.
Whatever you're comfortable doing.
It's up to the board. I can go through line by line. I don't know what the board feels about that. I actually have a summary, too, that takes a lot out of it because I think it's important. It's all over the place and it makes it harder to read unless you're really familiar with what transpired between that time period. If you wish, I can give that out to the board.
How about for the benefit of the public, if you just quickly go over the summary of the report?
Absolutely. Does the board want a copy of it, too?
Yes. Sure, yes, please.
I do. The first, again, keep in mind it's the state fiscal year, which is July 2014 through June 2015. So we took that date, those data points, and we collected the information in terms of trips, bus passes sold in that time frame. One thing you should keep in mind, and this is where I had a disagreement with, at the regional meeting with the TV commissioner, for one day passed, they were saying that's only equivalent to one trip. I don't necessarily agree with that. Because I think if you buy a pass, at least a one-day pass, you got to go and you got to come back. To me, that's two trips. They see it as one. On the 31-day pass, which is a monthly, they see that now as 12 trips.
I see that as 40 trips. You have the pass for 30 days or so. You're not going to use it more than 12 times. I just don't agree with the conversion ratio, but I actually went with them because I was not in a position to refute them at this point. So that's what you see. We took bus passes and we converted them to trips based on the statistics that the TV Commission had provided. And that's how that was derived. If you go down the line, the first category you're going to see, well, the second category you're going to come to is Marriage with Disability Act. And you can see we have an operating expense that we give to our providers of $18,160,000 versus the connection cost of $5,628,000 for a total of $23,789,000. When you offset the revenue we receive, and the big one here, of course, is what we get from our co-pays during the course of that time period. It's a little over $2 million. We do get a $40,000 check from the Village of Wellington, which has gone up in time, and the next time we see it, it should be about $53,200. So Joe Desek from Finance has negotiated with them. So going forward, I think we're going to see a gradually uptick because we provide service over and above the three-quarter mile boundary of the ADA format in the Village of Wellington. We're trying to get some more counties to do that, but we haven't been very successful. Moving down, this is where the TD comes into play. We have an operating expense of a little over $3 million. We have a TD grant of $2.7 million. In honesty, that's a $3 million grant because when the TD Commission gives us that money, they expect the county to match it by 10%. So it's $3 million, you're less than $300,000, hence you come up with $2.7 million from the TD Commissioner. Again, co-pays collected, $216,000. DOS, Division of Senior Services, we do get one grant, and it's funny because the next item I speak to will actually talk to this. That is a federal grant. We get $250,000 from the federal government to help us pay for the co-pays for those riders that go back and forth to nutritional mail sites, and only for that purpose alone. The last one there is what we call our Federation and Siegel. What happens, Federal Seagull has been contracted by the county to perform rides for us at a much reduced rate and a benefit to the county. So that's why we went into the negotiation agreement with them. When we look at the end of the day, we can see that the expenses that we incurred are about $30 million, $871. Revenue that we've got during the course of that time frame is just over $5.5 million, which means ad valorem funding is $35.4 million. That is the county's match in the ad valorem funding. If there's anything else you want me to go over again or come back to, I certainly will.
Does anybody have any questions?
Hi. The nice thing about I love the summary.
Yeah.
I also love perspective because, you know, I was like a contrast thing, so everything's well represented and not skewed. So what's really helpful here, when you see the cost, if you're able to put down a number, you know, if you do this again, because I like the summary, just next to it for perspective, how many rides?
Okay.
How many trips?
By
right, because of course my head's saying, okay. So how many did we do ADA? I mean, of course, that's where my brain goes, right?
Quantify it. Yeah.
So it just helps that. And then this is like a very helpful tool.
I see you. Yeah, I can see your point. Yes.
Very good job.
Thank you, Bobby.
This is very helpful. You know, you did make some comments that you have concerns about the way those trips are reported.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're going to have TD Day in Tallahassee, perhaps we could draft up some of those concerns and make sure we share those with our members of the legislature and the state agencies and try to get some of that changed. We can make those recommendations. So I do have one question for you. Under DOS, the $250,000 federal grant to transport folks to the nutritional meal sites, is that an adequate amount?
Are you asking if we overfund that? The answer is yes, we do.
I mean, are we supplementing those dollars to provide that service over and above
Absolutely.
Federal grant.
Yes.
So
yes,
we need more from them.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, that can be a little higher. I mean, that could be very helpful to the community. Yes.
I have one quick question. That grant that we get from ARA agency,
yes,
do we get it every year or?
Thank God it's been every year.
Thank you.
It hasn't changed all that much in terms of it's been about $350,000. So, yes. I haven't gone up.
Thank you very much. The annual expenditure report?
This is actually simply...
I'm sorry. We need a motion to approve the annual operating report.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor? I'm sorry. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you for that. Annual expenditure report.
This is actually a little bit simplistic in approach because all the TV commission wants to know, are we getting any federal funding? And as we alluded to in the previous section, yes, we are. We'll get a grant from DAS to $350,000. And all they want to know is, okay, this is your total expenses for that time period. What do we get in terms of revenue from the federal government? What is that apportioned to TRIPS? So when we look at this, there's only really four statistics. One, total expenditures, which is your $30,520,000. The number of one-way trips, again, that includes your bus passes conversion. And then to the flip side, that to the right is direct federal funding. How much federal funding? That's your $315,319. Associated trips, you can see this is only the trips associated with that amount. Not as you alluded to, there's a bigger number than that, but this is only the support you get from the $350,000. So there's your $9,683. And the only purpose, again, is to see how much federal support we're getting, what trips does it provide. That's the only thing they're looking at. Maybe during their mechanism, they take that into consideration when they do the next upcoming TV grant allotments. But other than that, that's the only thing they're looking at, federal money received.
The MPO staff reached out, you know, comparing old AERs, and Mike was very excellent in explaining the difference in numbers this year. So it really was that bus pass conversion with the reduction. So, I mean, it looks bad on paper, but, it works out to what the CTV currently has. They came here in, I don't remember in November, but they had a regional training, and that's where we discussed that number. And so that is something I think to work forward to, you know, seeing if their number, if their conversions are correct, maybe they can be improved. So.
Do we have any further questions on the annual expenditure report? Thank you very much for all your hard work and summarizing some very difficult numbers. The complete streets draft policy and proposed process.
Good morning, everyone, again. So I'm going to present this briefly on behalf of Valerie Anderson, who's our transit coordinator at the MPO. So this is a very preliminary complete street policy. So it's in draft form, and really what we'd like is your feedback. So if you're interested in joining kind of a task force or a working group to get this going, we'd love to hear from you. So please see me after, and we can get you signed up for a meeting that'll be coming up soon. So what are complete streets? Basically, it's streets for everyone. So it's about the pedestrian. It's about the bicyclist. It's about getting all users safely from one place to another. And it accommodates all ages and disabilities, of course. So why complete streets? We want to improve safety. Palm Beach County is given the ranking of the third highest in pedestrian and bicycle injuries, third highest in pedestrian fatalities, and we're tied in fourth for bicycle fatalities. So it's really important. Our county is not the safest when it comes to pedestrians and bicyclists, so we want to make sure that we're accommodating everyone when we're talking about complete streets. So when we're looking at ways that we get to work, huge percentage of us, 78.7%, are only using their cars to get to and from work, or just getting around. Walking is only 1.5%, public transportation 1.9%, bicycle, motorcycle, taxi, or other is 1.8. People work at home is 6%, and people who carpool is only 10%. So the vast majority of us are still driving only to work. So the purpose is really to accommodate, like I said, all users in our federally funded and state-funded transportation programs. So the MPO has something called the Transportation Improvement Program, or TIP. So we have this list of projects that will get funded over time by these dollars. So we want to create a complete street network and recognize, though, that every trip begins as a pedestrian, whether that's you walking to your car, walking out of your car, walking to the bus, getting off of the bus, you start and end as a pedestrian. So we'd really like to establish a hierarchy that looks like this. So pedestrians are at the very top, bicycles, public transit, commercial vehicles, and finally, single occupancy vehicles are all the way at the bottom. So our statement would go something like this. We just want to make sure that we're achieving a safe and convenient network, and we're really trying to prioritize funding of complete street projects by providing educational opportunities, encouraging local jurisdictions to adopt and implement local complete streets policies. So just looking at a couple of our current values and our targets, so like I said, we do have quite a number of injuries, fatalities regarding pedestrians and bicyclists. So we'd really like to reduce that, you know, by 2040, bring it down considerably. And of course, increase the road choice for people who are not using just cars, but bicycle and transit as well. So we'd like to increase those. But we also want to see local jurisdictions adopt a policy. So right now, West Palm Beach has one in the works, or they have one, and then I think Delray Beach is working on one too. So we'd like to see more local jurisdictions adopt policies.
Can I ask you a question about that slide?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have those injuries and fatalities broken down by age of the victim?
I don't know the annual report that this comes from. I'd have to look, but we can get back with you on that.
I'm just wondering if there's a correlation between getting to school safely and these numbers.
We'll look into that for you.
Yeah, I'd like to hone in on that also. How many accidents or injuries are occurring by schools?
Mm-hmm.
How many are by whatever type of transportation, or whether it's pedestrian or whatever? Not only the age portion of it, but also how do we compare population-wise to other comparable counties? And I know this is not going to sound right, but if we have more injuries, could that be because we have a lot of people using it, which is good for the community, versus having vehicle accidents? I think and if West Palm Beach is saying they want to have more bicycles and pedestrians, and they're going to Sweden to figure out what they're doing over there, if the accident rate increases in West Palm Beach, it seems like it's, I don't know, we're trying to do well, but then we're also creating accidents. And it's the same thing like crossing Okeechobee Boulevard. I like the numbers, but I'd like to know what is it comparable to. So if Miami is very, very low and ours is very high, it's like, what are they doing? Is it because of the bike paths, or I don't know.
Yeah, we'd love to look into that further with you and follow up. But I do want to say that when you design complete streets, you're also considerably reducing speed of the road. You're adding control devices so cars don't have the tendency to speed, and also makes it safer for cars, too. They're at the bottom of their priority, but people still use them, and in South Florida, people are going to use cars. So just so you know, complete streets offers a safer environment for cars as well, if they're there. But preliminarily, it's about pedestrians and bicyclists.
Well, and I don't, once again, belabor it, but I just think I read it that some municipality here is going to permit golf carts on their roads, and it's only in certain designated roads. I don't know if it's Jupiter or something like that up there. And I was like, well, they can crunch our numbers for us now because there may be more accidents, but they're encouraging people to go to Publix on their golf cart. It just seems like golf cart, public roads. Interesting, but.
Thank you, David. David
Evans? Yes. There's another aspect here, too. The types of vehicles that are involved in some of these accidents,
mm-hmm.
That comes to mind because we do have quite a number now of hybrid and electric vehicles that are very, very quiet. In fact, my last encounter with a Prius was in the parking lot across the street from the governmental center. some lady in a Prius. I'm walking through the parking lot, and the lady in a Prius just backed up suddenly, no sound. And the first thing I knew was my cane was going. I felt my cane being pulled down, and it was my cane being pulled under the car. And I had to let go of the cane or break it. I did that, and I felt the back of the car. I jumped up on top of the trunk and started beating on the back of the car, and the lady stopped. But by the time she stopped, my cane was out in front of the car. So the problems of quiet vehicles is here, and it's something that we've been trying to do for at least 6 years, is to make sure that we start getting statistics and accident reports about what kind of vehicle is involved. Is it a SUV? Is it a electric vehicle? Is it a hybrid pickup truck? Whatever. These are something that are lacking in some of the accident reports, and we need to get the state involved in doing some of that, so we can track these specific kinds of accidents with quiet cars. Because, like myself, being blind, I have to use my ears and listen to the traffic to know when it's safe to cross the street, to tell who's moving, who's stopped. And then I have to trust the God to watch over me as I step off the curb, even with my dog. I say this because I have been bit twice in this county. Both times where I hit and run drivers who were never caught. So it's a particular bone of contention.
Thank you, David. You made some great points. So we'll make sure we look at that, especially as we're making more of a trend towards electric vehicles, which, you know, quite often are silent.
It might even be something that we want to take to the TD Commission for TD Day.
Thank you so much.
There's also a strong relationship between the advantages of having complete streets and obesity.
Mm-hmm.
I can also get you some data on the injuries by age from our QA system.
Thank you so much.
Does this include also, I'm looking at drilling down, like homeless people or people who are getting hit on the street with their own, solicitation or something?
I'm not sure about the breakdown, but these are all reported accidents, so if they involved anyone who was homeless, we could see if it was, designated, but we can look into that further.
And hopefully with the passage of the county's new ordinance on the solicitation and medians, we'll see a reduction in those types of injuries and fatalities.
Another thing that I've noticed, too, is that they're cracking down on people that are jaywalking. Mm-hmm. Walking in the middle of the streets, especially like military Okeechobee Boulevard, where it's very dangerous. You can use the traffic signals and crossing.
Just had that argument with my teenagers.
I like to see them ticket the people that go through the white lines when there's somebody in the white lines. The white lines mean, like me, disabled. They are in the white lines. You're supposed to stop or slow down or something. And sometimes they don't do that. Yeah. Especially if they're making a right-hand turn and you're trying to beat the light. Choom! You have to be very careful.
That's a great point. So applicability, basically we're not going to be looking at projects that maybe are based on just safety and educational programs, intelligent transportation systems, planning studies, and projects where the facility doesn't allow bicycles and pedestrians. So, for example, the turnpike wouldn't have a complete streets because we're not going to see pedestrians and bikes on it anyhow. So the process, again, we're looking at the MPO priority projects, and we're going to give funding to those projects that are really making it safe for pedestrians and bicyclists. So the next steps, like I said, we're going to have an ad hoc working group, so we'd love to invite anyone who's interested to come and work with us. We'll have a workshop to kick off the working group, and of course we're encouraging all local jurisdictions to participate and get involved. So does anyone have any questions? If so, you can forward them to Valerie or myself, and we can speak afterwards.
Thank you.
Do you have a question?
Already volunteered.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that. So the very helpful undertaking that the MPO staff is doing with this project, I don't want to date myself, but if anybody remembers playing the Atari game Frogger, that's how it feels to cross some of our busy roads in town, dodging traffic there. Let's see, the CPC update.
Or if you could turn to section 3D1 of the packet. And then beginning on page 18, this is Pontran Connections average weekday ridership. And while these are the monthly reports, we try to group this specifically so it's more of a quarterly report for the local coordinating board meetings. And this gives you a historical trend of our average weekday ridership. And as you can see, though, we did have a dip in July, but it did increase back up. Or, I'm sorry, a dip in June, and it did increase back up in July. On the next page is our total monthly ridership, and that has been trending downward, but that's mostly because school has been out. We do expect to see that go back up on August and September. On page 20, this is connections trips by program, and it's pretty consistent on a month-to-month basis. 80% of our ridership is under the ADA program, 13% under the Transportation Disadvantage program, and 7% under the Division of Senior Services. The next page, this is our productivity, and we have peaked in July. That's our highest month of 1.57 trips per passenger trips per hour of service. But that does, being that high, it does tie in a little bit to the next page on 22, which is our on-time performance, which that did go down a little bit to 94%. So still high, but it did go down as we try to balance productivity and on-time performance. Page 23, that is not only our on-time performance, but also percentages and trips, 0 to 15 minutes late, 15 to 30 minutes late, and so on. There, the focus to be, while we do have late trips, we have been focusing on minimizing to make sure we don't have many trips that are later than 15 minutes late. So we've been doing good with that. The next page, our accidents have gone up from the previous months, whereas they were trending downward. Keep in mind with that, though, most of our accidents are not safety-related per se. It's hitting barriers that come down in gated neighborhoods, things like that, backing up into mailboxes. Page 25, we wanted to give a perspective of volume of service for each provider. And this stays pretty consistent month to month, 40% MV, 40% First Transit, 20% Marudi Transportation. That's helpful. Then on the next page, when you see the accidents by vendor, when you look at July, Marudi's not there because they had zero. So, and Marudi has consistently been low, but this gives you a perspective of each vendor and where they stand with the number of accidents. Our road calls have continued to be low. Very pleased with that, but it is a new fleet. We just hope to continue that trend long term. And this gives you an idea of, on page 28, the number of breakdowns by each vendor. Our complaint ratio, that does run a month behind, so we didn't have July's yet. But you know, from March through April, May, and June, that has continued to trend downwards. Although we don't know what the complaint ratio is going to be going into August and September, while we hope it remains low, we have had issues in August, specifically when school was back in session. To us, traffic seems a lot worse. You know, with school traffic, we've had, you know, an increase in the number of trips provided specifically to schools. But those two combined, our on-time performance did go down the first week. We've tried to add more routes on the street to overcome that. But then the second week, as you recall, we had five straight days of thunderstorms. That didn't help us at all. And then the end of that week was also, you know, what wasn't a hurricane, but no real weather compared to that, other than some storms over the weekend as we went through. But we have been taking steps to try to correct it as quickly as possible.
Are you transporting staff to those schools, parents to those schools, or students?
Students to those schools.
What did you say?
I'm sorry. I was asking him if they were transporting staff, students, or parents to those schools.
It is students.
So are we reimbursed by the school district for that?
Unfortunately not, because what happens is we only have a few students that actually go to public school. And in our previous discussions with the school system transportation, there's places that the buses can't go, so they can't get to those students, so they kind of rely on us, and there's not many. The big ones are charter schools, which don't provide transportation, and private schools, which don't provide transportation. And the school basically says, I don't know how the child got here. That's up to the parent. And the parent says, so we can't deny them transportation because they are eligible under ADA. And it's kind of, I don't want to say stuck, I don't know if that's the right word, but, we end up with quite a few to specifically those two groups, and it just increases every year slowly, and it keeps ramping up. Lou did have some success, though, with one of the charter schools, the new Els Academy, is it, in Jupiter, that at least they bring all the students to one location, and then we pick them up and take them up to Jupiter. Other than that,
they also provide a personal care attendant on the vehicle for those kids with autism and all that, which is a big deal for us too with student transportation. Remember, every student has a disability of some sort, so parents just put them on the vehicle and say, let's go, but really we need personal care attendants. But we can't mandate personal care attendants because according to ADA we can't mandate it unless there's a safety issue or something like that. So the school is a big time issue for us because we also have to wait in the loop just like everybody else. So our vehicle is sitting there in the loop and dropping people off, and it kills us on time performance. And our system is really not made for school transportation.
Are you waiting in a bus loop or the parent drop off loop?
Parent drop off.
In the afternoon, it's very bad when we're picking up those kids.
And then we also have, they have a very short window. So we can't drop the students early before the traffic picks up at these locations because the school does not want them there earlier than 8, but don't be any later than 8:15.
Can't be left alone.
And as we just said, they can't be left alone. So system-wide, not huge, but it is a problem specifically on those routes. It delays us greatly.
Well, we have a new superintendent who's been very responsive to community concerns. Can we invite him to a future meeting to talk about some of these issues?
Thank you. Page 28, we included these reports for May, June.
Before you go, sorry to interrupt. Are you aware about the strategic plan that he's proposing for January, February, March?
Superintendent.
I was thinking maybe the transportation issue may be something that he would want to address. I happened to be in a meeting yesterday where he brought this up, and I think Virginia's concerned that Baker's working on that in addition to some others, but I want to make sure this committee or this department is involved with whatever goals are being set. And he came up with a lot of information that I was shocked about bus drivers and for the school system yesterday.
Oh, they're having a terrible time. I have two kids that ride a school bus in the morning, and they have not been on time yet this year or at the right bus stops, and their whole computer system is, so they're having a big transportation conversation. And charter schools, of course, are considered public schools, privately run, so we're going to be dealing with that, and they're really at the legislative level coming after the public school districts on this transportation issue, so this is a conversation that we need to have. I would love to participate in the strategic planning sessions, but I also think that he needs to come here in this smaller environment and hear from
That's what he's doing, he's going to these different committees and doing his presentations, and so somehow reach out to him. One little fun fact, he said that some of the bus drivers call in sick, that they don't take sick leave or ask for compensation. They just call in sick. and what was the reason for that? Well, if they make more than a certain amount of money, $22,500, they'll lose their Section 8 housing voucher, which means...
Well, we're drifting. That issue with the school and how they hire their bus drivers is separate from this. I just want to focus on using our PalmTran Connect vehicles to transport students, and not, I think that we need to be reimbursed, and that's a conversation that we need to have. Yes. Mr. Evans?
I would just, as a consumer and a rider, I would say it would be very good if the school could have someone there early enough to make sure that we don't wind up in a situation where we have to sit there for 20 minutes or 30 minutes to wait for someone to show up to take charge of a child that we need to drop off so we can get our routes done. That happens to me quite often, that we get to a school and it's too early, and then we have to either ride the kid around for a while and bring him back and cover the same territory twice, or, you know, we can't leave them there because there's nobody.
I agree, and we'll make sure that we include that when staff reaches out to the school district to request that meeting.
Yeah, if they would have someone there early that can do that, to let them in or take charge of them, that would go a long ways to helping with on-time performance.
Agreed. Thank you.
Pages 28, 29, and 30 are the May, June, and July top 15 connection customer communications by category, and this is all complaints and accommodations received. As we go through the months, we've tried to adjust these a little bit to make them easier to read. So specifically, if we look at July, accommodations 180, and discourteous employee is our top category. For complaints, but you also see the color variations. We broke it into excused, valid, not valid, and documented also, just to give you an idea on those. Page 31, this is our raw complaints, commendations, and valid complaints broken out by each of the service providers. And page 32, that is PalmTran Connections program, where anybody who has ADA eligibility can ride fixed route for free, and this just gives you the perspective to see how that program continues to be used more and more, which is great. And we can't directly say it's affected PalmTran Connection ridership, but we believe it has, and that individuals who can't take the bus for those trips are, and in the trips that they need PalmTran Connection can still use PalmTran Connection.
Thank you. Are you seeing a reduction in the number of calls related to Uber and Lyft being in the county?
No.
Are they really affecting our numbers here?
No. And for page 33, I will turn that over to Roseanne to go over the bus pass agency sales.
Okay, page 33 shows our statistics for our bus pass sales. We look at July. Our total non-agency sales for the month were 5,250. And then a combination of our tri-rail intermodal sales, our agency sales, our sales here in our connection office, and Government Center and West Palm Beach Libraries, our total sales for the month are 88,282. We have noticed a decline in our sales over the past couple months. We are keeping an eye on it, but everything like the tri-rail intermodal has a steady sales during the month. We started that about a year ago, and it's been very successful to help people not having to travel all the way here to our West Palm office and where we were in Lakewood. So that's helped a lot. We'll keep monitoring it, but our sales are pretty steady. Any questions on that?
Yes.
As far as bus passes are concerned, I want to again thank the county for my little pass. Thank you very much. I use it a lot, usually on tour hops, because getting this thing in and out of a bus is a little hard, but it's really worth it. Thank you very much.
Small part I played in that. You're welcome. Do we have any other questions on the CTC update? Thank you very much. Good reporting. Let's see. We have the Refugee Services Program. Miriam?
Actually, the level two background screen.
Okay.
Level two background screen.
Yeah.
And
okay, yeah, sorry, this is kind of a big conversation.
Just a brief history on the program, then I'll turn it over to Charlie Bodiger to provide more detail on exactly how that works. But just with the discussions of our level two background screening, Consumer Affairs recently started having a level two for cab drivers. Excuse me. Also, and then with the talk of Uber and background checks for that, we thought it would be a good opportunity to discuss with everybody the level two background screen process as a whole. And basically, it came about probably 4 or 5 years ago in that we were notified by the Division of Senior Services and Elder Affairs that there was a change in the law governing that any direct service provider to a vulnerable population had to have a level two background screening. Instead of having a group of drivers that followed one process and then having a different that could transport DOS clients, we thought it would be better just to uniformly apply that over our system as a whole. So with that, I'll have Charlie give you the details on exactly how that works.
It's funny that this should come up at this time because the state right now is changing the way that they're handling it for us. So, level two. I figured I would start right now with giving you a four-line definition of what the state calls a level two background check. A level two is generally refers to a state and national fingerprint-based check and consideration of disqualifying offenses and applies to those employees designated by law as holding positions of responsibility or trust. Section 435.04 of the Florida Statutes mandates level two security background investigations to be conducted on employees defined as individuals required by law to be fingerprinted pursuant to Chapter 435. And as Ron indicated, the county attorney has advised us that our drivers, based on the fact that they have information that the general public doesn't have, such as someone's home address, fall under the category of a direct service provider. Level two checks, I'm just about to highlight some things, someone's background for sexual misconduct, murder, offenses involving minors, kidnapping, false imprisonment, luring or enticing of a child, firearms within 1,000 feet of a school, controlled substances. There's a list of many different violations that would disqualify an individual from getting a level two background check. Thus, they would be disqualified as driving in our service. So what's happening at the state level? Let's go backwards to go forwards. Company like MV, they typically use a company that helps them in expediting someone's application. So this third party gets involved, and they would take the person's fingerprint, fill out the application, and submit it to the State Department of Elder Affairs. And as Jeannie Christman, the general manager, will attest, we wait. Sometimes we wait 3 days, sometimes we'll wait a month, depending upon how busy the state is. The process is going through a transition right now. If you're going through a web-based application, people like MV, First Transit, and Maruti, in our case, will have employees of theirs registered to be users of the website. They will apply not only using fingerprints now, but they will also have to include photographs of the individuals. The state will then get the information, run this background check to see if there's any offenses, and we're hoping, we're praying, that the process will be much more streamlined and that people like MV and First Transit will indeed get a much quicker turnaround so that they don't have trained people sitting at home waiting for approvals to come from the state. So, we used to go from a very antiquated system, so now we're going to an online system that Jeannie's staff, if you will, or Rick's staff at First Transit will be able to monitor. They'll be able to say, all right, Charlie's no longer an employee of ours, take him off of our list. So they'll be able to manipulate their own lists, if you will, and keep it current. Whereby before, everything was send an email, Charlie's no longer an employee, please remove him from my list. The level two background checks are valid in the state of Florida for 5 years, and they don't need to be employer specific. So again, if I jump from NV to First Transit, my level two will follow me. So that's a kind of in a nutshell where we're at right now with level two background checks.
I've done a lot of research on this recently because I'm a supporter of Uber drivers being fingerprinted. Why wouldn't our service providers go through the Department of Consumer Affairs? I asked Eugene how long it took for the cab drivers, level twos, to go through, and he said 3 to 5 days. So we shouldn't be using any provider that takes 30 days to get the information back to us.
What he was saying, though, is even in some cases, because they funnel through one person, and it's just how many that person. So I think even Consumer Affairs is going to have that same issue at times. For the most part, it's pretty quick. But there are delays when the person has a backlog of applications.
Our drivers used to be subject to Consumer Affairs' ordinance years ago. But when they rewrote the ordinance, they eliminated our drivers, Palm Train Connection drivers from that ordinance, because what we were doing internally here was basically just being duplicated by Consumer Affairs.
And an unknown benefit of us going to this process is under the old system, when we just got a background check, Charlie would have to check that and, you know, make judgment calls sometimes on backgrounds as far as, well, how long ago and what was the situation, what was the disposition, and now totally it's a third party, which is hugely a benefit to us.
And, of course, the county's ordinance is likely to change on September 22nd. So there's three cab companies that just filed a lawsuit in Tallahassee and sent a judicial circuit yesterday to rewrite all the statutes. But I hope you need to keep a very close eye on that to make sure that this part doesn't change. Yes, Bobby.
When you do the background check, is information from other states in our system so that if a driver, you're checking the background of a driver and he's just new in Florida, you're going to get it from the other state?
Yes.
That's the difference between a level one and a level two. So level two checks the federal database. And I believe the employer is alerted if there is a change before that 5-year time period.
You're absolutely correct. The database tracks people who might get arrested, and if the arrest is something that would disqualify them, the employer gets an immediate email that says that their level two has been placed on hold based on the outcome of that arrest. So it's quite an efficient system, and as Ron indicated, it takes all the power away from us and it maintains at the state level, and they make the determination based on the offenses that are listed outlined in the statutes.
Any other further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we'll move on to refugee services.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are we all doing?
Good.
Excellent. I have a brief presentation on Refugee Services, which is a program on the Department of Children and Families. It's a brief overview. I'm the community liaison for the Department of Children and Families for the Refugee Services Program. I represent the Southeast region, which is Broward, Palm Beach County, and the Treasure Coast. This is a program who has been with the department for many decades. Most of the time, our headquarters have been in Tallahassee. A couple of years back, we decided to make it more community-oriented because this is where the refugees are. Many community members are not aware of this program, so this is an effort for the community to be more aware of the refugee population in our community and also what are the needs of the refugee population. As you see here, the primary function of the Refugee Services Program is to assist the newly arrived refugees to become self-sufficient as quickly as possible. This is a 100% federal funded program that we have under the department, and many skills are for them to attain, for example, employment, learning the English language, and to oversee some other barriers. This program provides services to the refugee population. Now, the refugee term is used through the media and through the community very vaguely, but we go by the international law definition of refugee, which is someone who has fled their home country in fear of persecution for reason of race, religion, nationality, and membership in a social group or political opinion. So this is strictly the definition to be eligible for this program. Presently, there are over 60 million refugees and over 43 displaced internally refugees worldwide. Usually, United States typically resettle from 50 to 60,000 refugees. We are based on a presidential memorandum that we received around September, and that's how we know the numbers and the countries that United States will be processing through the refugee resettlement program. Refugee services client includes refugee and other groups which our U.S. government has made eligible for these services. The asylee is someone who applied for asylum once they're already in the United States. Refugee, when they enter the country to the Department of State or Department of Justice, they come already with that refugee legal status. Other groups that may qualify is the Cuban and Haitian entrants, unaccompanied refugee minors. The unaccompanied refugee minors also follow the same definition as the refugee who have been persecuted in their own country for those five reasons that I mentioned before. Victim of human trafficking, these are the international victims of human trafficking who are certified by the Department of USA, Department of Health and Services. Also, the children, they don't receive a certificate. The children are human trafficking. Usually, they get a letter from U.S. Department of Health and Services. Especially immigrant, this is the Iraqis from Afghanistan. This group have helped the United States militia oversee. And because of that reason, the family also have been persecuted. They also have suffered, and they have been the victim of torture. So this group, when they enter, they also receive a special visa because of what they have helped the United States. Refugee clients are eligible for refugee cash, refugee medical assistance, and this is up to 8 months. It's a short term, like we said. This is to get them started and become self-sufficient as quickly as possible. The program that we all call FUSTAM, this is now called SNAP. This also is eligible and is reviewed every six months. Families that come with children, they receive services through Career Source, and this is based on the legislature statute. Other services are available up to 5 years. One example of this one is learning the language, adult education. Last federal fiscal year, we go by federal fiscal year because it's a 100% federal program, we received 33,770 new refugees, asylees, refugee minors, victims of trafficking. Refugee services have served a total of 72,221 unduplicated clients. Florida Refugee Resettlement Program is the largest in the nation, and this is because we also include the Cuban and Haitian entry numbers. This is our partners, and we hope some of you can also become partners of the Refugee Services Program. All the services that we have, we contract them out through RFP invitation to negotiate. We apply at the national level for grants, and then one that is RFP in the community. But once we have this program, this is the community that works with us. We have a refugee task force. We meet every other month. In Palm Beach County, is a Friday after the third Thursday of every month. Easy to remember, right? So it's the Friday after the third Thursday of every other month. And I would like to invite you also. The next task force meeting here will be at the headquarters, this Palm Beach Healthcare District headquarters in Bayport. The meeting will be from 10 to 12. And these are the members that come, elected officials. We have the refugee resettlement agencies. I have one of them here. UCOBOP is one of the international organizations that resettle refugees overseas. Catholic Charity, Church or Services. These are the nine BOLAs that we have internationally, and they sit in the table with us. And we also have, you know, other organizations that Community Access Partners and stakeholders where the refugees are impacting our lives in the community of Palm Beach County. These are some of the services that we contract out. Some of them are based on the needs of the community. So here in Palm Beach County, for example, we have child care. We have a contract with the Early Learning Coalition. Adult education, we have a contract with the Palm Beach County Department of School Board. Youth services. And we also have integration assistance. It's a great program with the Church Board Service. They help them integrate the community and also information and referrals. And we take some of those calls that are geared towards where do I go for help, helping also the 211 system in that regards. These are some of the numbers that we have in comparison for example, last fiscal year, Palm Beach County resettled 1,535 refugees. This is a strong community where we are receiving not only Cuban and Haitian, but also Burmese, Myanmar, Colombian refugees coming into, and Congolese. That's one of the numbers that we have. But most of them are Cuban and Haitian through the refugee program. These are the programs that I mentioned that we have in each county. We have them in most of the region. These are the services available to the refugee to have them resettled effectively. And the TANAS, which is the temporary assistance for needy families, they're also part of the system that we help them provide these resources. So as you see, these are the population in Palm Beach County. They are working. They are in need also of transportation services. Some of the elder population that most recently been arriving are over 65. We have a special grant in Churchward Services to provide short-term case management to that group. But there are also members of our community who are working. And many of them are in a key position, elected officials. Some of them are working with elected officials. Some of them are working at entry level. The employment provider, who is also Youth Co-op, also assist them in employment. They provide job development, job skills, and they teach them how to travel the public system. So I was interested when Ms. Annie mentioned the committee working on the street. Definitely, I think it's quite important and needed for the new population. We had an incident, for example, in Broward, one of our refugees from Egypt. He was stopped by the Fort Lauderdale police. And he was not aware that in Fort Lauderdale they had a law where they need to have a bicycle registered. So that was something new for him to learn. So what I did, I invited the Fort Lauderdale police to the task force, and they gave us a presentation how Fort Lauderdale unique law is required for anyone who owns a bicycle to register a bicycle. And it was interesting because part of that system is there were a lot of bicycles being stolen. So therefore, by registering, they also could get a replacement bike. Most of the refugees at the beginning, they walk to the orientation. They travel by bicycle. I just met a refugee from Cuba last week, and he traveled 9 miles every day to the orientation that is required. Because for them to get this assistance during those 8 months, they have to be diligently working or searching for work. So he rather takes his bike than on any other means of support. So I think it's excellent what you're trying to do. Thank you. Merci. Gracias. Shelag. Any questions for me? Excellent. And I gave you this information, and it's more than welcome to share that. And this welcome to Florida is available in different languages. So if you have an organization that has a reception room, we have it in Spanish, Creole, and English in this community.
Miriam, thank you. And last year, Florida law changed and allows unaccompanied minors now to consent for their own health care. So while they're getting health care services and they're underage, let them know if they're 16 or 17 that they don't need an adult consent anymore if they're certified on unaccompanied minor.
Oh, excellent. Thank you for that information. I'm also part of the human trafficking coalition meeting, so I will share that with our group.
And we'll be posting human trafficking hotline signs all over the county now. We're the first county in the state to implement the local option. That's something I work very hard on. So
yeah, to get that information out. Excellent.
Do we have any questions on her presentation? I am curious, for not just the refugees, but unaccompanied minors in general, are they able to come and apply? I mean, if they're in school, they can go to their guidance counselor and be certified as an unaccompanied minor, and they have that paper that they have to present to a healthcare professional. But if they bring that to PalmTran or PalmTran Connect, are they eligible for
assistance and bus passes and those types of services?
So the transportation disadvantage, you're eligible by age, income, or disability. So they'd have to meet one of those criteria, and then there's like the follow-up that there must not be a vehicle present at the home. So any of this...
They don't have a home.
So, and they have no vehicles, so, and they probably have no income. So they would qualify for TD trips based on that. And they wouldn't qualify for ADA because ADA is disability, correct? So they would, that's the main purpose of this board, to, you know, supplement ADA when you fall under those other criteria, so.
Okay, our next meeting is a public hearing on December 9th, 2015 at 9:30. Do we have any comments from the members of the board? I'll start with Ms. Valentine.
Maybe it's because I've been doing this a long time. I've been associated with paratransit for not as long as David, but almost as long as David. David was at the beginning. I came about 20 years ago. And maybe it's because once I get involved in something, I look into it. But if you are concerned about, or you have any concerns about transportation, all you have to do is open your mouth and ask. The library will tell you. There's an information number for the county if you wanted to know what kind of meetings there were. We know that there's a commission meeting every other week. Every Tuesday, 9:30. So if I wanted to go to a commission meeting, I could go. Most people who are interested or want to become advocates learn about things. If they don't, they don't. It's just like if you don't like how things are with your government, but you don't vote, you don't have a voice. If you want to see things change, you vote. If you want to see things change, you need to come here. This is not a gripe session, from what I understand. This is a problem-solving, issue-oriented organization. So if you come, you should be coming to find the answers to your complaints, because Paltran has an excellent complaint department, and they do take care of complaints, and as you saw in their report, they can tell you exactly what are the complaints and how many there are, and where they categorize. So all you have to do is ask. There's a Freedom of Information Act. You only need to ask. If you can't ask, too bad. That's your fault.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Also note that normally our county commission meeting would be next Tuesday on the 15th, but because of the high holidays and the Jewish faith, it has been moved to September 22nd. So there was a hand over
here. Yes. That the 2016 Section 5310 grant workshop, and that 5310 workshop has to do with how to fill out the application for the grant that provides capital for agencies serving persons with disabilities and seniors. So it helps. It's a significant discount on capital equipment such as vans, and agencies only need to pay 10%. So that's happening on Friday, November 13th. No, I couldn't change it. It's the Friday. It has to be the 13th. It'll be down in Fort Lauderdale. When I have all the details out, I will send it to the MPO, and they will get the information out to everybody, too, and spread the word. And it will cover everything that's involved. And the compliance, there's a lot of compliance involved, too.
Thank you, Nancy. Are there any other comments from members of the board? Do any members of the public have any questions or comments related to items on the agenda? Stanley, go ahead and give you that flexibility today.
I'd just like to make this comment. With everything said today, with the millions that are being spent on bus and paratransit vehicles, facilities, personnel, and administration, only 1,500 people a day ride on Connection, and 15,000 people use the entire Pontran bus service. Why that is a long story. And it's one that obviously we didn't even address today. In the meantime, thousands of county residents who lack safe, dependable, affordable transportation suffer every day. This meeting is just one more occurrence of sweeping the problem under the carpet, the problem of the lack of adequate TD transportation for people with disabilities and many other needs. And I just hope that in the future, things will improve. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Voice, you can lead a horse to water sometimes, but you can't make it drink. But what I will ask is each month at the MPO meetings, PalmTran as a whole gives an update to the members of the MPO, and perhaps we can ask them how they are marketing these services and maybe if we need to make some changes in the marketing of the building.
And PalmTran is actually on our board. Fred, do they do it twice a year or once a year? They do an annual report.
Annual.
So, okay, so they are officially, so we'll look into monthly, see if Charles can accommodate that.